everyone, and welcome back to the 16mm Film Crew. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Dale.
You can watch us on YouTube. You can like and comment on our YouTube video and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can listen to us everywhere podcasts are found at 16mm Film Crew Podcast. Leave us a rate and review. And visit us on our website at www.16mmfilmcrew.com. So this week we watched Suncoast, directed by Laura Chin. A teen living with her strong-willed mother must take her brother to a specialized facility. She strikes up an unlikely friendship with an eccentric activist at protests surrounding a landmark medical case. This movie stars Nico Parker, Laura Linney, and Woody Harrelson. So, Dale, what was your thoughts about this film?
Man, I thought it was a touching film, kind of dealing when you're young and have to process grief. It's your process is kind of skewed. You don't really know how. And also, she has the added emotional baggage of having an absentee parent, basically. Not in the sense that her parent's not there, but emotionally, her mom is like kind of, her mom focuses all her attention on her brother, to the point where she even forgets she has a child when she was talking with the grief counselor. So, yeah, it's a touching movie. It reminds me a bit, kind of, particularly Woody Harrelson's part about his role in Edge of 17 with Hailee Steinfeld. His character was very much the same, and the movie kind of had the same beat. I mean, but usually with coming of age pictures, that's usually the case. You do find an adult outside your circle that you kind of mentors you and helps you get through whatever you're doing. But other than that, I thought it was an amazingly put together movie.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I wasn't prepared for how emotional it was going to be. I got really emotional. It was very personal to the director, but also just like to anyone who's had to care for a parent, who's had any family member who has been sick or just struggling, like being a sibling of someone who is struggling. Like that's really, it got me in a way that I was not expecting. But during the Sundance Film Festival, this was one of the movies that were there and I wanted to see it, but I was looking at some other stuff. So, I didn't actually know what this was about. So I kind of went in unprepared for like how heavy it was going to be. But I do think that they balanced it well with like having it be a coming of age story, because it is about a young person who is just trying to like be a teenager, you know, live her life, do things that everyone else does, but has the extra responsibility of being a caretaker. So like, and with a mother who's like very intense and kind of just solely focused on the ill child. So it was, yeah, very emotional. I got teary-eyed. I might have cried at the end. Maybe.
Yeah, it's like a lot of elements with this project I can relate to, you know. Like I remember like being like the Terry Schiavo backstory to this, I kind of vaguely remember it because all that protest stuff was kind of happening in Central Florida when I was living in Miami. So it's like it was still a constant, you know, ongoing news cycle, and also talking about hurricane season at that time. And like I know the timeline of when this movie is happening. And I love how her character is also, she's kind of trapped in an environment that's not her own. You know, she's going to like the crappy private school, not having the funds for it. Like I can kind of sort of relate to that, you know, going through, you know, church education, all me and my sisters, and kind of knowing like it's kind of expensive. Parents can't really afford it, but we're going to, you know, throw you in there. You know, I kind of can relate to that. I do. And the part that I probably thought that was, what's the word I'm looking for, was kind of off the path of most coming of age movies, was she became actual friends with the rich girls. And even the awkward one who kind of got jealous when she found out the boy that she liked her, you know, she was still, if she wasn't negative about it. Sometimes in these coming of age dramas, they kind of do turn the popular kids into another obstacle these characters must overcome. So I'm glad to see that trope was not happen in this movie.
Yeah, that's true. I'm glad. I mean, I don't like the friends. I was like, girl, please get some new friends. But these were the friends that we were stuck with. So whatever. But I did want to backtrack and ask you, the case that they're talking about in the movie, that was a real case? Because when I was watching it, I did think about you because I knew that you grew up in Florida. So I was like, what was Dale's experience with the subject?
I mean, I didn't really have to do, like I said, because like it was happening like Central Florida, like St. Pete, Clearwater area. Uh-huh. Like that's kind of Tampa-ish, if I remember correctly. Yeah. So that's like, I can get to Tampa from the highway, like, and drive from Miami, not like super far. So that section of like all the protests and stuff didn't really happen around Miami where I was. I mean, there were some protests going on, but like the big ones are all in that part, that side of Florida, not where Miami was. So I kind of do remember that. Like, if I remember correctly, the whole thing was about, which I think that's how, because this is a semi-autobiographical picture by the director. So it's kind of ironic that as her and her mother are dealing with her brother being in a vegetative state and having brain damage from his cancer, Terry Shriver is also happening, which is the same circumstance, but it's a higher profile case happening with them. And basically her mother's kind of dealing with the same problems. I think Terry Shriver's family, particularly her parents, were, if I remember the case correctly, the husband was like, no, she wouldn't want to live like this, and the parents were like, no, she would want to try and survive somehow. So that was the whole thing going on. And with this movie, Doris kind of already like has set that her brother's dead, and mostly due to her mother kind of just ignoring her, and her mother is still like, no, he's alive, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, like he's still there. Like they're at two different points of grieving, where her mother is in a continual grieving state, where Doris hasn't really processed what's happening to her family because of her mother's behavior.
Okay, so that's interesting. Yeah, I feel like the mom, Laura Linney, just being insane, like, that was great. I mean, I liked all the performances, but the character of Christine is so over the top. Like, it's just, like, just doing, like, the most extra stuff. But you know it's coming from a place of care. And it's weird because, I don't know, I can relate to Doris's character a lot. But I can't relate to, like, a parent in the situation. Like, I can't imagine like what it would be like to like have a child grow inside of you and then like give birth to that child and then have to see that child die. Like, it is a completely different experience. But I did think that a lot of things that she did was just way too like crazy. One of them being when she lied about him dying, I was like, what is wrong with you? Like, you're not well. Like, obviously this is a traumatic moment for you in your life, but like, that's insane. And then when she was like, she only has one child, I was like, this woman is crazy. Like, I can't, like, there is definitely a thing when like one sibling or one child is going through something really difficult where a parent will shed all that attention on that child and getting them well, getting them better, trying to do everything they can for them. And then they do end up neglecting the other children in the house. But I think that this just kind of took it to like a new extreme, because how did we get here? Like, that was crazy. Like, I would feel so terrible.
Yeah. And it's we're talking about this movie from Sundance. Got just on Twitter, I think somebody had posted a video of somebody like, you know, millennial age group, like talking with their parents, like having fun, you know, joking, kikiing with their mom. And they're like, yeah, you're actually like, let's talk about our relationship. And the mom's like, yes, think it's gonna be a good old thing. And she's like, they were like, you're emotionally manipulative. Like, you do X, Y, and Z. And the mother instantly was like, you're a bad person. So it's always kind of funny how, I don't think parents realize it, how parents can sometimes be emotionally manipulative and gaslight their kids. Like, particularly in this movie where she's like, oh, your brother's dying. Come, the nurses are here, everybody's here. Just because she can't find her daughter. And she goes, it didn't happen tonight, but it'll happen soon enough. You know, how do you, like, and the thing with telling somebody that somebody's dying, it's not just an action of, oh, I have to be there. Your body and your mind just go into, like, 20 different places. And you can't process stuff. So to purposely put that on a child is really, like, how could you be that type of person?
It's incredibly messed up. Like, that was so messed up. I think one of the things that I felt was, like, weird, or maybe not weird is the right term, but just, like, strange, is that she chose to go to prom instead of being in the hospital. Like, after she got the call, she still went to prom. It's like, I don't know. Even when I was 17, I know how self-absorbed you can be when you're a teenager. And I get it from her perspective, where it's like, I haven't been able to do anything. So, like, I want to enjoy these, you know, milestone moments in teenagehood. But I don't know. I'm sorry. Prom is going to have to wait. Like, I can't. There's, like, I don't know. If someone was to call me and say that to me, like, I'm immediately at the hospital. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, if I have to miss out on this event, I guess I have to miss out on the event because, like, someone close to me is dying. Like, I don't know. It's just, to me, that didn't sit right. Especially because in real life, Laura was there when her brother died. So the choice to, like, write the character where the character actually misses the death is, like, one of the only, like, unrelatable things to me, because I was like, there's no way.
Yeah, I can kind of understand where she was coming from, because she just dealt with her mom gaslighting her. Her mom knows you're going to prom, and your mom, like, your mom has been basically being very emotionally manipulative and abusive to you, and so she's in that moment of deciding, because she had just the night before started processing her brother not being her life. Like, he wasn't there, like, oh, how should I say it, emotionally and mentally, you know, because he can't communicate, can't do anything, but at least he was there. And there's also another aspect of when you're dealing with people in those states that you've also taken care of them. So now there's absent, I'm not taking care of you. And before that, I can't, like, be a family member to you. Like, we can't talk, we can't play around. So it's multiple levels of, oh, he's not here, I don't gotta care for him. Cool. But it goes, oh, I'm rewatching all those old tapes that she's rewatching all those tapes. Like, oh, these are all the memories we had. And that's all I'm gonna have left. I'm not gonna be able to make new ones with my brother. Even though he's in this vegetative state, I can at least say, hey, look, hey, I'm getting married. You will be in a wheelchair and we'll walk you down the aisle. All those moments that he might not be able to respond to, but he would be there for, or no longer there. And so that took priority. Like, oh, I'm at prom. My brother and I got to experience prom and all those things. And then she finally realizes, I need to make amends and say my goodbyes before I can. And that's what kind of Woody Harrelson's character is getting her to realize in part of his mentorship of her.
Yeah, I thought that he was really good in terms of, like, talking about, like, what that was going to mean. Because obviously there's no way you can really prepare for it. But, like, I think she at least had some idea of, like, what it was going to be like. And he was saying, like, you know, you're going to miss all the bad parts. And I totally get that. Because, like, when you're in it, it's like, I want this to be over. At the end of the day, like, you would rather have that person there than not there. Like, and that's just the truth. And I feel like that's what she kind of journeys, like, that's where she ends up, where it's like, I understand that even though a lot of my life was taken away because I had to care for him, him not being there it's going to change everything. Like, it's a complete rupture in all of our lives. So I like the arc of, like, how she got to where she got. I thought that was really realistic and relatable. It was just, like, I don't know. And I totally get it. Like, if your mom just called you and lied about what was going on, I feel like you're not going to be as trusting to whatever she says next. But I think at the end when she says, you know, I'm not telling you what to do, I'm just giving you the information, that to me was more like, well, now it felt more real, because it's now like, well, I'm not saying what to do. It's your choice. And yeah, so that was crazy. And the friends, the friends are so fake. Like, I couldn't stand them. I hated the friends, and I hated the little boy that she was trying to date.
They're trying their best, okay? They're trying, like, the weirdest scene was when all those two girls were high. Like, oh, your house is so small. It's like a dollhouse. Oh my gosh, it's so cute. And then, okay, I don't mean to be, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. I looked at a picture of actually Laura Chen, and I was like, you and Nico Parker kind of look less here. You are very white passing, Laura. The scene where they're like, oh, your hair is so like wild. You're like a lion. That's kind of like really subtle racial undertones to that.
Yeah, that's weird.
The other black friend has braids, but her braids are kind of always portrayed straight, like typical white person. So when you go to one of the few classmates of color, go, oh, your hair is like a lion, and you start making lion noises. That's kind of like a thin line of it could almost go the opposite way, but it is what it is. That's just my take on it from looking at the outside. I don't know how she took it at that time, but you know, it is what it is. But yeah, this, I don't know. I mean, it makes sense at that age, and if anybody is familiar with going to private schools sponsored by churches, black or white, there is always a socioeconomic gap where you have the kids who are struggling to be there because their parents aren't there, and the kids whose parents are doctors, lawyers, or whatever, who parents send them there, and there's always that divide. It's more prevalent in the private schools than there is in public school, so.
Yes, as speaking as a person who went to private school, struggling, really struggling, like yeah, it's really annoying. It's actually deeply annoying. But yeah, that was very relatable. Just like, I don't know, because the girls or that group of friends, they are the most like popular people in the school, and I feel like normally you're not becoming friends with those folks normally. Like, sometimes it happens for you, and then you realize that they're not actually that cool, and then you go off and make all your artsy friends, which is most of our experiences, I'm sure. But like, but at the same time, it was like, I feel like they tried in their like teenage way to be good friends, but I also feel like because their lives are so like free of real issues, I think the only thing that's happening with them is that they're just like, their parents are neglecting them. Like, your children are out on school nights doing God knows what. You guys need to be paying more attention. Like, I don't know. To me, I don't know. I got so old. I was like, why aren't you guys in your house doing your homework? Like, but that's how I felt. I was like, y'all need to go home, okay? You need to go home and do your homework. But anyway, it was giving very classism, like, just buy a new shirt. Like, girl, I got a fixed amount of uniform for the year. For the year, that was it. September to June, like, that was all I was getting. So I don't know what y'all are talking about.
Like, you see my house. I can't get another shirt. I can't get another shirt. Another shirt's not coming. Yeah. And I
want to relate
to that so much. Like, I remember having, like, I remember my private school had, like, we had, like, three colors to wear. And mom was like, okay, you're getting, like, a button-up in one color and a polo in the other. And that's it. You're going to have to make
this
work. You come home from school, you take that shirt off and hang it up so you can wear the other one. You rotating that boy. One pair of pants, we're both of them. You scratch that pants. That's it. I can't buy you another uniform. You better make this last for the year so I can buy you a new one next year. Or sometimes I'd end up wearing the same shirt the following year, but just better pants because boys get taller. Yes, I relate to that so much.
I feel like that's so many of our experiences where it's just like the shirts got the pit stains on them, the tights are ripped up. There is nothing you can do. You just gotta go to school anyways. So like, again, very relatable. It was hitting too close to home. It was like, okay, stop reading my past trauma. Thank you. But yeah. That, again, I wanted her to like realize that these girls weren't it. Like, I really wanted her to realize that. But it's okay. Maybe she'll realize it later. I feel like once her brother died, I feel like she probably has a new perspective on like what's important. And also, she's graduating high school, so she's probably not going to see these girls anymore. Anyways, so it's fine. It's just I was pissed because I was like, can y'all shut up? Stop talking. Like, I was so angry.
I mean, it's clear she already was in that mindset of what you guys are concerned about is not really important. Like, she even mentioned, like, her last, the most pivotal part was the class where every time they cut the class, there's always that one boy and the teacher going back and forth on these ideological debates. And everybody has been in a classroom growing up where they think there's always one kid who's smarter than the teacher and they go back and forth. But this teacher is actively engaging it. Most teachers like, all right, cool, let's get back to your assignment and they squash it. But he was like, oh, I'm going to have this intellectual debate with a 17-year-old who hasn't lived life. Why? Why are you trying to do that? And she's like, what y'all are doing is stupid because y'all are debating like morality and stuff and y'all haven't had to deal with stuff. Y'all don't know what it's like until y'all in these situations. Like, so it's clear that she's already processed past the stupidity based on what she has to actually live with on her day-to-day life with her mom and her brother, past the point of the rest of her classmates and even the teacher around her.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like what she was saying in that class session really kind of summed up what the movie is kind of about, where it's like, you can think that you have a perspective on an issue, but until you're going through it, you really don't know what you're going to do. You don't know how you're going to react. You just don't know. And so, like, that hit me because I was like, that's true. I feel like we all be having, like, these little debates in our friend groups and stuff, which I think is important. I feel like you need to be it's important to talk about like social issues and stuff. I feel like that is what's necessary, but I also feel like a lot of the time we're speaking about it in a place of privilege and we don't actually know what it's like to be living in certain circumstances where you really don't have anything and you're just trying to like take it day by day and do the best you can. So I felt like that was such a good like wrap up of like the real message of like what this film is getting at, which is like, just don't know. Everyone's experience is individual.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. That's how I feel about the movie as well. I think the movie kind of wraps up those, her last kind of wrapped up the thematic point of view of the whole movie pretty succinctly as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone did a great job. The music was good because the music was from my childhood. I was like, I know these songs. Bump it. That was, the music was good. I think one of the Haim sisters did the music, so that was good. And I liked how it was shot too. And
yeah,
all the performances were great. I think I love Nico Parker. I want to see her in more stuff. She's amazing.
Yeah, I want to see her in more stuff too. Looking forward to it. And I think her kind of rise, like people don't really know her mother is Thandi Newton. Her father is a director and screenwriter. But I think also because of that, she mostly grows up in London. She doesn't have that Nepo baggage that most American actors who have that are there, and also the fact that her mother is not like a widely known celebrity over here, so now she's getting a chance to actually act on her own in the States And yeah, also the fact that she isn't her, he uses her dad's last name instead of her mom also helps her as well. But I do think they're like a list of Nepo babies who are actually talented in their own merit, which I don't like. Like right now, like Dakota Johnson, I don't think she can really act. She's one of those. I think if it wasn't for her name. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to wrestling on Nico's career as an actress.
Yeah, me too. And I feel like everyone should go see this. It's on Hulu. So,
yeah. Moving on from that, of course, I gotta, you know, put my lighters up like the spliff, you know. Of course, Bob Marley, One Love, it debuted Valentine's Day weekend. Opens to about $25 million, $52 million opening, which is very, very impressive because both Ziggy and Rita Marley, Rita is Bob's wife, and Ziggy's his oldest son, have mentioned the difficulties in the past of getting this movie made and produced. I know there are a lot of issues people have, especially Jamaicans, with this movie as far as the casting, but at least Lashana is of Jamaican descent. I think her mom is, even though she grew up in England. That's fine in my book. Kingsley Benadire. I think one of his grandparents is Trini, even though he grew up in England. So at least there's a Caribbean connection with both actors. And I think, you know, Kingsley's accent was actually a very spot on comparison. Everybody who listens to podcasts knows my documented history about fake Jamaican accents. I thought it was wonderful. And from the, like, yes, I'm, you know, second generation from my parents, but I do think a lot of Jamaicans have this schism of we are going to, what's the word I'm looking for? Handhold this version of our culture. Nobody else can take it. When you kind of forget, when Bob was alive, majority of his fan base were white people. You know, a lot of Jamaicans thought Bob was rebellious, you know. But now that he's entered this culture zeitgeist and he's kind of a cultural ambassador in our reputation of Jamaica, now we say only X amount of people can do it or be in it. But the movie also employed about a couple, like, 2,000 Jamaicans when they were filming in Jamaica. Yeah. So very few, like, so even though a Jamaican is not playing Bob, you know, Jamaican being on island, at least when the movie was shot there, it employed a lot of people. And it doesn't really happen that much because when James Bond goes down there to shoot, they're bringing a lot of people from the U.S. and England to work on these projects. So that's my take on that movie.
Well, that's good. I think that you were, like, very on the fence about it because is it Kingsley Benadire, right? Yeah. I always want to switch the first and middle name. But yeah.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
Yeah, I always want to be like, it's Ben Kingsley. No. Yeah. I feel like you were like, well, he's not Jamaican, so, and I was like, he seems like I'm not Jamaican, so I literally can't say anything about this.
Yeah.
But I also feel like sometimes you just need a big name in order for this movie to get made, and you can kind of do it the right way if you have enough money to do it the right way, which means, you know, getting certain people on board. But
yeah,
from the trailers, it sounded like he did a good job. So, and he had, and again, it seems like all the actors who play real people have true respect for the people that they're playing. So it seems like he definitely did. So I'm glad it's doing well. What didn't do well was Madam Web. The Sony multiverse connection to Marvel situation that is Madam Web, it clocked in over Valentine's Day weekend at $26 million, which was under what people had projected for it. When I saw the trailer, I was like, this movie's going to be garbage. So I feel like most of the people who went to go see it already knowing that it wasn't going to be good, and they just wanted to watch it, like, for fun.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a lot of issues with it from what I'm hearing. And Dakota Johnson, I feel like someone was saying that she wasn't even the worst performance in it. It was actually Tahir Rahim who plays the villain. But they were singling out her performance as, like, quite bad. So.
Yeah. And it's worse when you look in the interviews. Cause I think both her and Sydney Sweeney were, like, saying, oh, I'm so excited to be in a Marvel movie, blah, blah, blah. And the irony of this is, after she did all the promotional stuff, like, when the movie released, I think her people spoke to her and told her, like, it's not a Marvel. Like, she dropped her agent and her management company and signed with somebody else. Like, I feel like as an actor, when your agent tells you, oh, you're being offered a role as a Marvel character, at this point, you should ask, is it a Sony movie or a Disney movie? Because if it was a Sony movie, I'm taking it. You know, before, you know, the cool stuff you might have said, or the old X-Men stuff, you could have said, oh, is it a Fox movie? Yeah, I'll do it. Disney? Yeah, I'll do it. Sony? No. And Sony has the same problem that was DC had for a long time, is where their animated stuff was so much better than the live action stuff. Like I always said, if Warner Bros. And DC ever put who was in charge of their animation, their animated films, in charge of their live action films, DC would be able to compete with Marvel without problems. Sony has that same issue where the guys behind the Spider-Verse do amazing jobs. Let them be responsible for your live action stuff, and you'll be fine. And now there's like a rumor that James Gunn wants them to direct a DCU movie. So, hey.
Wait, so she dropped her agent after this movie came out?
Yeah, she dropped her, yeah. And switched.
Honestly, that makes sense.
Representation.
That makes sense. This was a bad move for everyone involved. This is not a good move. And the thing is like, people were hyping this up. Like, yeah. Not now, obviously, but like while it was in production, people were like, oh my gosh, it's gonna be so good. And I never heard of Madame Web. Again, I'm not like familiar with the comics, so I can't, maybe that's not like a shocker, but I was like, who is this person? Is she related to Spider-Man? And then I heard that they like legally couldn't even mention Spider-Man's name in the film, which is like, then what is the point of this? You know what I mean? It's like, I feel like Sony is just like picking certain projects like out of a hat, and they're like, let's try this one. And they're spending millions of dollars just like throwing stuff at the wall. And it's just like the worst time for that, because obviously superhero fatigue is like in high gear. A lot of the offerings that we've gotten have not been great. So it's like, if you're gonna do something, at least like try. And it seems like a lot of the people who were there just kind of phoned it in. Dakota Johnson is a very phone it in kind of actress. Like, she did well. I liked her in The Lost Daughter. I thought she was good in that. But on the whole, like, she is not a good actress. And I feel like we have to just accept that into our hearts, that like Dakota Johnson is not a good actress. Like, she is an icon. Like, her literally exposing Ellen, amazing. Like, do stuff like that. Like, just be drama. Like, I think that that's completely fine. But like, this acting thing, nah. We gotta hang it up.
Yeah. She is naturally very deadpan. So I think she should just take roles that fit that. But when she has to emote, she cannot emote. I think that's why, you know, the 50 Shade movies worked for her, because she didn't really have to do much emoting as an actress, you know. It's very much Dakota Johnson is who people think Kirsten Stewart is as an actress.
Yeah, but they're not the same at all.
They're not the same. That's what I'm saying. Kirsten, she'll give you range, she'll experiment, give you different characters. Dakota,
she's a good actress, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway. BAFTAs.
Yeah, the BAFTAs were the 8th. Oppenheimer won 7 of the honors. Poor Things got 5. Barbie, Kills of the Flower Moon, Maya Shirley didn't win anything. Zone of Interest won. Oppenheimer led with 13 nominations. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of like, I think for Oscars they have like 10 or 9 nominations. I think they have the most nominations for Oscars, I think. But it's the same. But yeah, the BAFTAs are like one of the few major pick award shows that leads up to the Oscars. So of course, as it continues, we'll probably keep track of who's winning where and who's winning what. Oppenheimer, of course. Emma Stone got lead actress. Of course, Poor Things won for like hair and makeup and costume. So we'll continue this more as more award shows coming out and track who wins what to kind of suss out who we was more likely to win the Oscars. I think I was looking like our list from our award show to end last season got on as to how the award season is panning out so far.
Okay. So I think that the BAFTAs are a place setter where it's like, you know what's going to happen Oscar night. So I think Chris Nolan is probably going to take Best Director, which is great because he has a wealth of like amazing films in his career. And obviously Oppenheimer was amazing. And Emma Stone might get her second Oscar, which is crazy to me because not because her performance wasn't like worthy of it or isn't worthy of it. I personally wish that Lily Gladstone would get the Oscar win, but it's looking like that's probably not gonna happen. So I thought Emma Stone did a fantastic job in Poor Things. I totally understand where this is coming from. But yeah, I'm a little sad because I kind of just wanted a person of color I want people of color to continually win the awards. Like, in the history of the Oscars, there's been so little amount of people of color who have actually won Best Actress. And I just feel like, for the culture, I would love for a person of color to actually win that award. But it's feeling less and less likely the more these award shows keep going. So it's fine. Like, because I never, like, when I was watching Easy A when I was, like, 12, I never thought Emma Stone was going to be, like, a prolific actress who would be in the realm of, like, Frances McDormand, Meryl Streep, Viola. Like, I never thought about her in those terms. But I think she is a kind of, like, a surprising actress where she kind of pulls it out. Like, I don't know. La La Land, I'm going to say that was a hasty win. I don't think that she should have won it that year. I think if she was going to win it, it would be this year for her to win it because Poor Things is a really great performance and a great movie. So, like, fine. But, like, to join the Two-Timers Club, that's elite. So it is very, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen because it's not the Oscars yet. But if the BAFTAs and all the other award shows leading up to this point are any indication, it's looking like she'll probably take it. But I want the Oscars to surprise us. Like, because they always do some craziness. Like last year with the Angela Bassett, Jamie Lee Curtis mess. So, like, yeah. they could do some next level thing. They could. But I want them to do it the way that I want them to do, which probably is not going to happen. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it now is, And I give it a credit to us, like, we've gotten so, I think, much better at critiquing and actually, like, we don't even really follow the award season, but in the last couple years of watching, like, watching more movies and actually talking about these movies, we've kind of gotten better. I think we have gotten a balance of understanding what the audience likes, but also understanding, like, oh, this is an award bait movie. Critics are gonna love this movie. It's going to win a lot of awards. So
this is true.
Yeah.
Thinking like a voter, an Academy voter.
Yeah.
Anyway. So let's talk about what we watched this week.
I've been kind of rewatching like old cartoons. Like, I'm currently marathoning Batman the Animated Series. I remember watching a lot as a kid growing up, and then, but sometimes what you watch as a child in the same way. But the thing with that show, I think in the 90s, a lot of the animated shows, those characters have kind of become the standard way a lot of people in our age group who were able to watch over time view those characters. I know for me, if I like pick up a Batman comic now, the former actor who played Batman, who died recently, his voice is the one I always read these comics. Not the movie stars, not like, it's always the animated versions always are the voices I hear in my head when I read these things. And it's really odd, those old 90s superhero movies, as much as, I mean, superhero cartoons, as much as they couldn't show, like, you can't really show, like, there were a lot of rules. You can't really show blood. You can't really show people getting shot. They still, because they came up with inventive ways to bypass those issues, they still stand the test of time creatively. Like, the Batman, that Batman cartoon was not, like, drawn on, like, white paper. They drew everything on black paper to give everything that certain aesthetic and detail, and like little quirky things like that on those old shows really stand a test of time, and it also shows the amount of care these people put into those old projects. So
I watched Blue Valentine because I started it years ago and I never finished it because I was like, this is too much. And it is a lot. It's still a lot. But everyone keeps talking about like how this is their favorite movie and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, whatever, I'll watch it. And it is, it's a really good movie. Like, it is. Like, I can't even try to like play them. I can't be a hater. Like, it actually is a really good movie. Ryan Gosling, great actor. The interesting thing is that like Ryan Gosling, I feel like people are, maybe since like La La Land, where people like really paying attention to like what he was doing. But this was made back in 2010. So like he was giving you guys performances all the way back in those days. Like he was so good in that. Especially because it bounces between two timelines and it's like great. And I remember reading about how him and Michelle Williams like live together so they can like find out the dynamics of this, of these characters. It was crazy. I was like, y'all need therapy and you need to not be together. But it was a really well performed and also like well written movie. And just the way it was shot and put together and everything, it was just really well done. It is giving kind of male gazey. I feel like because the director's male and it was made by the Weinstein Company. So Harvey back in those days, I know he was...
Yeah.
So it's giving that, but if you can get through that, it is a really good film. And Michelle Williams is always great, but like, that was such a great performance. Yeah, great movie. I get what the sad people are on about. It was good. Mm-hmm. And then I watched the Greatest Night in Pop documentary, because I know you said that you watched it. Was it last week?
Yeah.
Last week. And I was like, I'm going to watch this. I thought it was great. I remember when I was like a kid and obsessed with the 80s. I was so excited about it and like just finding out new things. And this was giving me that same feeling. And also like, how on earth did they organize this event in like 3 weeks with like all of these pop stars who were like icons, like literal icons? Like how did they even come up with that? Michael Jackson, I don't... I can't, but like, I don't want to talk about him like that, but I'm going to hold two truths at the same time. Like, he is a genius. Like, the fact that him and Lionel Richie, like, just like out of nowhere came up with this song. Like, I don't even understand like how people like do that. Like, how anyone was doing that, how Quincy was conducting, figuring out all of these parts, composing all this stuff, understanding people's ranges and stuff. So like, they brought in people who know how to do that. And then the engineers who were like making it happen in the booth, they were up until like 8 o'clock in the morning trying to record this in one freaking night. Like, they were at the AMAs performing. Like, how do you even have the energy to do that and then come here and stay up all night to record this? Like, honestly, mad respect for everybody who was a part of that. That is unfathomable to me.
Look, in that era when like Quincy Jones calls, says, yeah, Michael is doing a project with Lionel Richie, want you on it. In that era, you are picking up the phone. Like,
yeah.
The only close acumen I could say as far as a producer, and I mean an actual producer, would either be like Pharrell or Timbaland call somebody like, yeah, I'm working on this track, I want you on it. You most mm-hmm. artists drop what they're doing. Like, the only equivalent you could have for the impact, because Michael had people in like the fucking Amazon who don't watch TV knowing who the fuck he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he, like, people underestimate his global impact. Oh, and the modern day equivalent to that that we have right now, if we're being honest with ourselves, global superstar is Beyonce.
Yeah.
Like somebody mentioned, like, on with her tech with Texas Hold'em. Like, somebody was like, oh, we got Irish people doing Irish dances to country music. We ain't getting tickets to this second concert. Like, her global impact was like that big. And for a lot of people who weren't born, or even if you weren't born, couldn't comprehend Michael's impact. Because we were alive, that I was alive during that period, like, for history and bad and all that. I mean, Michael Jackson was popular, but I couldn't comprehend as a child just how popular he was. And it's not until Beyonce now I go, oh shit, he was, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It was just such a, it was like an inspiring thing, which is weird. I didn't know I was gonna leave that documentary inspired to do something, but I just thought it was so incredible how they were able to pull it off, because it kind of just seemed so impossible to get those amount of people in that room. Like, and then how they just figured out how to, I don't know. There was like a scene in there that really got me, where it was like, Stevie Wonder was like, oh, Bob Dylan asked Stevie Wonder if he can come in and help him like figure out like how he was supposed to sing it. And because Stevie knows how to mimic people, he was able to like play the part in Bob Dylan's voice and get the performance. Like, in what world is like Stevie Wonder and Bob Dylan like sitting in a room figuring out how to do it? Like, it's just so, I don't understand. That's what I'm saying. Like, my brain melted. I was like, how the hell do you do this? Like, it's, maybe back in the day, everyone was on a different kind of wave. Like, working hard was just in their nature. I guess that's just a generational difference or something. I don't know.
It's not even that. Like, they also knew how to hide the bad singers. Like, the people who were singers and famous, but they, y'all can't really sing, but y'all have won awards. Like, they knew how to hide those people and still make them feel a part of the song, which I thought is really funny.
That's talent. Like, and that's what I really loved about Quincy in that role, where he knew how to play people's strength, but he also knew how to like work with them to get what he needed out of them. Like, Cyndi Lauper, did she need a solo piece? No, because the girl can't sing. But they found a way to make it work. Like, they did. They figured it out. So I was like, that's a good leader. That's like just good leadership. I feel like him and Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson, like, they really knew how to like deal with it, which is crazy, because it's like, everybody back in the day had huge egos. They didn't want to be told what to do. So like, the fact that they got everyone to kind of cooperate, that's good. That's cool.
I can't imagine a song like that being done now.
No. absolutely not. Like, I feel like they've tried, haven't they?
I think they tried a second time in like the 90s-ish, 2000s. Yeah. For another, it wasn't We Are the World. I think it was it Live Aid? It was another one, but it didn't hit as good as.
Yeah, that was just a concert. Yeah.
No, it was. I think they also did another a song as well.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, if I remember correctly. Oh. And it didn't hit the same way.
I don't have any recollection of that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm about to go back and watch that music video again. That was good. Yeah, and I also like by proxy watch Society in the Snow. Is that what it's called? Have you heard of that movie?
No.
It's about like a soccer team who got lost in the Andes mountains and like.
Is and that's a team that like they ate themselves in cannibalism, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. That I watched that by proxy. I think it's nominated for something, maybe international film or at the outside, something like that. But that was intense. I'm just thinking because I'm also like watching. I'm watching True Detective, but I'm like, if I was ever in a situation where like I was stranded or something, like I'm ending it. Like I'm not surviving this. Like, because even if I get out, the things that I would have to do in order to survive, that would scar me for the rest of my life, and then I would still have trauma from the event overall for the rest of my life. Why would I want to live like that? it's a no. Anyways, that's it from us this week. We hope that you're all doing well. Make sure to check out all of our social media. We're on TikTok, so make sure to check us out there as well. Support us if you can, and we will see you guys in the next.